Hi, I'm Donovan with another episode of Azure Friday. I'm here with Nick, and we're going to be learning about how to use Habitat inside of Azure. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thanks, Donovan.
So, what do you do at Chef?
So, at Chef, I am a technical product marketing manager, which essentially means I'm responsible for taking what we say our tools can do and turning that into repeatable demos, training materials, etc., that our teams can use to both show off and teach people how to use Chef.
Awesome. So what we're going to be talking, I've known a little bit about Chef, and I know it's about provisioning resources and configuring them, but you're talking about something called Habitat, which I'm not familiar with. So tell me about what Habitat is and why it's important.
Sure. So Habitat is an application automation engine. So Chef itself, the tool, not to be confused with Chef the company, is our configuration management system.
Okay.
It's where we're interested in infrastructure and making sure that we can repeatably configure that infrastructure in a predictable way.
Correct.
With Habitat, we're actually focusing on the application itself, which allows us for both greater flexibility in where we deploy, but also allowing the automation to travel with our application.
Interesting.
So that, when we're deploying in paradigms where infrastructure isn't necessarily a given, say, you know, containerizing services,
sure,
we still need a way to manage the application lifecycle, and Habitat will help assist with that.
Okay, so in the slide here that you're showing, it looks like we have several different components of Habitat. So there's like there's the build, the deploy, and the manage. So is the build where considered basically our CI portion, and then the deploy is our CD portion, and managing it, or is it a little different analogy there?
To a certain extent, it I think it would basically hook in with CD systems. So
okay.
If you're using Jenkins, Bamboo, what have you, you could use that with this process. The way that Habitat sort of sits is that it builds our application into an artifact with some extra functionality.
I got you.
So that when we deploy that artifact, we're able to do things that can be difficult, particularly when we're talking about sort of our immutable infrastructure and serverless future. How do we do things like config changes? How do we tell our systems about the topology or update strategy?
Gotcha.
And all of those are built into those artifacts that we're creating.
Got it. So when you say build here, the CI system would have already gone and produced my zip file, my WAR file, whatever the artifact is that I would generally create, that has been created. And then the build step of Habitat is taking that and then packaging it with other information that we need to actually do a successful deployment.
Potentially. Or, and this is kind of the neat thing about it, it can take care of building those WAR files, what have you, as part of the build process.
I see.
And then it ultimately will create what's called a HART, Habitat artifact.
Okay.
Which will contain both the actual application itself, any of the things that are needed to run it. So in this case, it'll be things like Tomcat, my web server.
Okay.
As well as when it's deployed, it'll run with a sort of sidecar supervisor system, where each instance of my application or any service within my application gets deployed into a ring, where it can be aware of its neighbors and take independent action based on what it finds out about those neighbors.
Awesome. Okay, so show me how this stuff works.
Yeah. Oh, and here is the aforementioned sort of ring setup where each of these instances has the service running, but also that supervisor. It provides information to other members of the ring and also exposes an API endpoint. So if we want to query our application, find things like, you know, what build or runtime dependencies and versions were used to create it, we can actually interrogate the supervisor to find that out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And these are just VMs?
So they can be VMs, they can be bare metal, they can be containers.
Oh, great.
What's interesting about this is there is a HAB process that we can use to launch these on traditional systems, but we can also export them into a container image. So we can export into, say, Docker.
Okay.
And then if we want to deploy into, like, Kubernetes farm or something like that, we can deploy in much the same way. And the artifact itself doesn't need to change for that.
Perfect. Okay, so it gives me some type of portability as I want to grow from traditional to virtualized to even containerized. I can use the same HART file to move from all those different platforms.
Exactly.
Perfect. I love it.
And indeed, we'll see a couple of those permutations in action here. So I have my Azure portal running here, where I've got a resource group already created to support this National Parks app.
Okay.
So nothing super special. I think this is a demo Java app that you can get that we've turned into a Habitat package. And ultimately, when it comes time to deploy a change for one of these, Habitat provides us with a few cool tricks we can use. So if you take a look at my project here, I have a Java application that's the National Parks app is written in Java.
Okay.
And in this source directory here, we can see all of my source code.
Sure.
So things like HTML for my web app and all that fun stuff.
Right.
What's unique to Habitat is we have what's called a plan. So this is where we define things like the metadata for our application, as well as definitions for what other services it'll need to bind to.
Okay.
Since we have a database that's going to be running on Mongo, and we're going to need to connect to that, we'll actually be telling it who its database host is when we deploy it. But we also have things like defining lifecycle events here. So when I build, sort of as mentioned earlier, we're actually building with Maven as part of the build process.
Okay.
And ultimately, when we're done, we'll end up getting a heart file like these ones here that have a nice little timestamp and version that I can use to organize. Ultimately, we can also define things like lifecycle events. So what does it actually look like to start our application? We can define here. We have the ability to insert some conditional logic here. So we see if I've defined a database that I'm binding to, it'll go ahead and update configuration variables accordingly.
Perfect.
Otherwise, it'll use whatever I've set as a default, which would be localhost.
Okay.
Now, to get some updates running, I'm going to hop into my studio. So the hab executable has this hab studio command. And entering a studio is essentially going to launch a little container on my system that I can use as sort of a clean room development environment.
Okay.
All that's here are the things that I'll need to build and run my application. Since I've already done a build in the background here, I'm just going to go ahead and start up the new version of my application on my local system to see whether it's ready for prime time before I deploy it to Azure.
Okay.
So to start things off, I'm going to first start my database backend. So we have a hab start. NRICAR is my origin. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But I'm going to put up the MP MongoDB. So this is going and grabbing all of the dependencies that my MongoDB package requires, making sure if it doesn't have it locally, goes and grabs them from the web. Thankfully, we got them all warmed up, so we don't have to wait for that.
So was this a heart file as well,
just
for the Mongo? Okay,
yeah.
Got it. So my database is a heart file, my front end is a heart file, and what I'm doing here is just instantiating them locally so I can have that inner loop development cycle without having to deploy them first.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's actually worth noting, since you pointed out, so too are all of its dependencies.
Ah, I see.
So when we see things like, you know, core GCC lib, core glibc, those are all packaged with Habitat.
Okay.
And the advantage here is that when it comes time to publish, and I'll take a quick look at my plan file here again, I have dependencies defined here. And these dependencies get pulled in, and any of their corresponding dependencies get pulled in as well.
Perfect.
So that whenever we build, we have everything we need in this sort of isolated artifact and don't need to depend on them already existing on the system we deploy to.
Okay, so one more. I'm kind of geeking out a little bit, so
yeah.
I want to make sure how this works. So when you spin this up, is it actually spinning up a VM on my local machine? Because I know it's going to be running in a VM in the cloud, or is it running natively on my machine?
In this case, it is running inside a Docker container on my local machine.
Oh, wow, okay.
In this case, while you can actually export these to be just a container I run with Docker run,
sure.
I'm sort of inside of a pared down OS in my studio running with the same hab binary I'd use if I wanted to run it on bare metal or on a VM.
All right, this is going to be the last interruption for a while.
Nah, no worries.
Yeah, you're on a Mac, and I also use Docker, obviously, for Windows. You have Docker for Windows. Would this work on a Windows machine as well?
Yes. And actually, one of the cool things as well, if you're familiar with Chef at all, we like abstraction.
Sure.
So Chef and our compliance automation utility InSpec both have a DSL that we use to abstract out the things we'll want to do.
Okay.
In this case, however, I'm using Shell. Since this is a Linux app, we're using Bash in Windows. PowerShell would be what we use here.
Gotcha.
But ultimately, the abstraction comes in how we manage it. The build process is going to be native to whatever platform we're building for.
Awesome. Okay, so now we have our database backend running.
Yep.
My guess is we're going to then use the heart file for our front end
to
verify locally. Got it.
And actually, so I mentioned that supervisor. On my local system here, I'm running this hab soup status command, letting me know what's already in my supervisor group. And we can see here that MongoDB has been loaded, has that mongodb.default. And that'll be important to me, because when I deploy my front end, it's going to need to know who to talk to.
Absolutely.
So when I start that up, we'll do that same hab start command. And this time I'll grab my National Parks app. And I'll pass it the bind flag, where I'm going to tell it that its database is Mongo or mp-mongodb, there we go.
Okay.
Dot default. And I'm going to go ahead and say that my channel is unstable. I want to grab latest bleeding edge. Don't need to worry about update strategy since I'm just doing this on my local system, but you can define how an app should be updated.
Okay.
Whether we want it to automatically pull in new updates when they're promoted. You can even set up things for rolling updates when they're promoted. Or you can just say, take no action. Don't update until I tell you to update.
Perfect. So this the beta database is basically doing discovery. So it figures out all the stuff it needs to make a secure connection to that database and give me access to it. Okay.
Got and because that database is part of the ring, I don't need to tell it an IP address or a host name. And if I've got a cluster, I don't need to tell it who the leader is.
Nice.
Because it can go ahead and ask the supervisor for all that data and interpolate it dynamically as long as I tell it which of those services I want to bind to.
Perfect.
And in this case, I've got it running locally. So I should be able to refresh. And on my local machine, we see the new version, some updated colors, some pretty red pins, and a new version just so I can keep track of what I'm doing here.
Right.
But so far, I mean, things look more or less like I want them to look.
Sure.
So the question becomes, how do I take this and deploy it to my live system? Well, when it comes time to actually create and, or rather to publish our artifacts, we can publish them to a depot service. So here we have the Habitat Builder service, which is running off of habitat.sh. And we can see here that I have a number of versions of my app. And currently, the latest stable is this 6.33, which is what's running here.
Okay.
In order to deploy my new change, really all I need to do is tell Habitat that I'm ready to promote this new 6.41. Because the stack that I've launched into Azure is set up with an at-once update strategy, once it detects that this new version has been promoted to stable, it's going to go ahead and deploy that version without me needing to take any direct action.
Oh. Got it. So is it the supervisor that's polling this to see if it's a new version there or not?
Exactly. It's defined with sort of where to look for updates.
Okay.
And actually, since you bring it up, quick call out to how this whole stack got built. It's spun up with Terraform, which has a few benefits. One being that I'm actually a fairly newcomer to Azure, so this helps provide those lovely abstractions so I can just talk about what components I need. But also, as we see here, Terraform has a Habitat provisioner so that as I'm deploying these VMs, I can define things like who their peers are, connection strings, and any of the Habitat-specific information like that update strategy and where to find packages that are needed when they get promoted.
Fantastic.
If we wanted to do some more formal CI/CD, we can actually set these to automatically create build jobs based on when I promote to, say, like master and GitHub.
Okay.
And so it would trigger a build so that I don't have to go build manually on my system.
Okay.
And even opens up the door for things like dependent builds. One of my dependencies got updated, so I want to see whether or not I can consume it. So go shove out a build, and now I just need to test a heart file that hopefully went and got built while I was sleeping.
There you go. Perfect. Awesome.
But I think I have filibustered long enough that, yeah, so when we pull back up my Azure deployment here, we see this new version of the application running.
Fantastic.
And sort of as mentioned before, I can also go ahead and query, and I'm going to have to look it up because I can never remember what the port is, but I mentioned earlier that actually I can just look at my resource group because I opened up the port for it. So if we actually take a look at my RG that I've created for this and
security group?
Yeah, look at my security group. Remember what ports I opened up. And it's one of these 9630 ports. So let's go ahead and see here.
You can guess on that one.
Yeah. Well, I've got a 50-50 shot.
Yeah, you do.
So worst case scenario, I'm not going too far down a rabbit hole.
And what are we trying to do with this port? What are we going to be?
We're going to query. So I mentioned the supervisor exposes an API.
Okay.
And so I can ask that API for information about my ring.
Okay.
So I can, for example, go ahead and, if I hop back into the terminal anyway.
There we go.
Clear things out. And I'm going to go ahead and curl you on, what port did I say I was going to connect to? 9631. 9631. And go to the services endpoint. And we'll just pipe that to JQ for pretty output. Of course, I'm using any integrated terminal and it doesn't know. I'll hop back in here. Oh, where I've already done it. Look, I made my life easier. So what we get back, and just to show there's nothing up my sleeves, let's go ahead and
a nice blob of JSON.
Get some updated data. But here's a subset of the information that the ring knows about my application. We can see things like the URL that was used to grab those updates. So this is where it looked to find that update and what channel it's monitoring, as well as things like ports that are exposed for the app. We're running the web port on 8080, and all of our depths. So I can see here, for example, the different libraries, packages, what have you, that were built alongside and their version and release so that I have up-to-date data. And we can see here, this got updated with our new version along with our update. So I can confirm what I'm seeing in the browser from here. And this is actually the same data that's being used by my components to do things like figure out whether a leader needs to be promoted, figure out who their DB host is, all that fun stuff.
Fantastic. So it shows that Habitat really makes it easy for you to manage your IaaS resources inside of Azure that are hosting your applications.
Absolutely.
This is fantastic. Well, thanks for so much for coming.
My pleasure.
We are learning all about using Habitat in Azure here on Azure Friday.